Hello, this is Noreen Sumter from Beyond Potential. Live life your way. Hey, Amy, how are you? So tonight we have an amazing show for you. And I would like to first tell you about my week. So I am actually in the process of doing an online webinar, which is, for me, is like really, it's really great. It's called Storytelling for Change, and it's being run by Acumen. And yeah, it's a really good course. They have lots of courses. And this one is called Storytelling for Change. And so what I've been doing is I have a group that I'm actually involved with. And we meet on Mondays. You get all the homework. It's a lot of homework. It really is a lot of homework because you have to write a story and it has to be 300 words, right? Me, 300 words. I can talk 300 words, right? So my first story that I wrote was 900 words and then I lost it. It got lost on my computer because I didn't save anything and I was gutted because it took me hours to do that. And then I had to rewrite from memory, and then, which came up to about 650 words. And then I had to pare it down. But I was thinking maybe I could just get away with doing the 600 words and putting it up there. But I thought to myself, let me just double check. And so I went through and everybody had followed the instructions, of course, except for a few people. So it took me another 2 hours to actually pare it down to like 300 words. Actually got it down to 200 and something words. And then I had to let it, you know, send it off. So it made sense. It was good because I was talking about when I was 11 years old. And then what you have to do with that story, again, this week, is you have to go in and add gestures, conversation, tone, and all the parts that make up a story. And it cannot go over 300 words. So now today I got it down to 285 words. But oh my God, it is such a good course because you have deadlines that you have to make, right? So, and if you don't play the rules, then you're not going to get the fun, you're not going to get the learning. So next week, what we have is that we are now going to use the story and add it to presentations. So I'm going to be practicing a lot of my storytelling activities on the line. So stay tuned, everyone, or just Amy. And I will share more about that. So tonight, my guest is Dr. Jones Adu. Did I say it right?
That's correct.
Okay, Dr. Jones Adu. Dr. Jones, or Jones, is from the Bronx originally. And he came here from Ghana. So we're going to hear about his journey from Ghana to New York, one of the poorest districts in the country that he described it. I didn't actually know that. I thought that a southern district would be the poorest, one of the poorest, but it's one of the poorest, not the poorest.
Actually,
right?
It is the poorest.
Oh, it is the poorest in one of the richest cities.
Yes. Actually, it is the poorest in the United States.
Yeah, I got that, but yes. It's located in one of the richest cities. Yes, so that's kind of shocking. That's very shocking. So he's going to talk about his journey. So I'm really excited to have him here. I met him at the Manhattan Chamber of Commerce where he was sharing his story or parts of his story, what he does for a living, which we'll hear about that. And I just thought it was really exciting. So I invited him to come on my show. So welcome, Dr. Adu or Jones.
Jones, yes.
Okay, so welcome.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me start out by saying that I'm very... it's my first time on the radio. I feel honored and privileged to be here, Miss Noreen Sumter.
You know, just Noreen. or Queen.
You know, appeared in, you know, the OI. I read the article. I think it was pretty powerful. I just feel honored to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Oh, you're more than welcome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I told the audience that you're here from, you originally from Ghana. Mm-hmm. And so just tell us a little bit. Tell me some more. So you're from Ghana. So you came here when you were 10.
I actually came in. I was 11. I came here in 89. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from a small village, Achianse, in Ghana.
Achianse.
Achianse. Yes, that's correct.
Close enough.
I came here initially 89. Uh-huh. Brought here by my mother, and I grew up in the Bronx.
Okay.
I have one brother.
So we were talking about before we started. What was that like for a 10-year-old boy to come from Ghana, mm-hmm. nice, lovely, warm Ghana, mm-hmm. to come to New York City? What was that like?
Yeah, I think most people that are come from other countries to come to the United States to chase the American dream, uh-huh. Usually you have a picture of America as a place with tall buildings and lights, uh-huh. and that's all I knew about, you know, about America. All I knew is a picture, uh-huh. A tall building with lights. Uh-huh. And then I came here. I was blessed enough to have my mother, who was a teenage mother, bring me to the United States. Uh-huh. And it was pretty inspiring and a little interesting, but I was blessed. I felt blessed to come here.
Right. So your mother was a teen mother.
That's correct.
And then she received an opportunity to come to the United States.
Yes.
That's kind of a big deal.
Definitely.
In Ghana, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Because she could have been, like, ousted. Like,
that's true.
So that's really great.
That's
and
true.
So your mother was a nurse.
Yes.
Okay. So you're here from Ghana. Mm-hmm. You're in the Bronx. What was it like your first couple of days?
I think, like I initially stated before, my vision of the United States was like a place, you know, a place of opportunity, but I think graphically just a place with tall building and lights. Uh-huh. That's what I recall. Uh-huh. And then here I come, and the plane landed. I come and land in the Bronx, and it was a little bit different. It was a little different.
A little shocking. Just a little?
It's a little different. It was shocking, a little dangerous at times, but, you know, that's life.
So what was your first day in, did you live in an apartment or a house?
I live in an apartment, the
okay.
same apartment that my mother passed away from,
uh-huh.
East Tremont, uh-huh. 179th. That's where I'm from.
Right, East Tremont.
Yes.
Right, and so it's the first day you're in this apartment, like, you're coming from green grasses, right, can go run about and play in your community, mm-hmm. to you're in this apartment.
That's correct.
And so what was your days like?
I think, typically, like I stated, my mother came here for a purpose. She had a purpose. She come mm-hmm. here mm-hmm. To make sure that she has a successful career, but at the same time, also make sure that her children do better than her.
Right.
So mostly my day just encompasses of just getting up in the morning, going to school, and coming home. That's it.
So you pretty much had like a Groundhog Day. You know that movie, Groundhog? Get up, go to school, come home, go to bed, get up, go
That was pretty much it.
And so as you get older now, so now you're like 13, what was that like, if that was a consistent pattern?
That was pretty much similar. You know, get up and go to school, uh-huh. and come home. And any free time I would, any free time I'd be reading. But I went to school, not 5 days a week, I went to school 6 days a week. So any medical program my mother can get her hands on, I was part of it.
Right. Uh-huh. So when you weren't reading medical books, uh-huh. what were you reading?
That's a good question. What was I reading? I think at a young age, my mother, you know, her vision was that if you wanted to play outside, you had to read before you go outside.
Right.
That's it. So anything, it could be anything, a newspaper, anything, a magazine, as long as you read, you was allowed to go out.
So you must have been a fast reader.
Yeah, I tried, but she quizzed me, but I tried, you know. So
she would quiz you on the things that you read?
Yeah, tell me about the book you read.
Right.
Okay, so sometime initially I would just put the book on my face and I went to sleep. And then I wanted to go play basketball like every other kid in the uh-huh. Bronx. Okay, and she was like, before you go out, give me a little bit, tell me about the book.
Uh-huh.
I initially didn't know that she actually read some of the book, so she kind of have an insight about some of the books. So uh-huh. she asked me a question. If I couldn't answer it, she would have said, go back and read before you be able to go outside and go play.
Wow. Wow, your mother was strict.
Yes, she was.
So what would happen, or did this ever happen when you like, you know what, I don't want to read today?
No, I couldn't do that. I was apprehensive about my mother, respectfully, of course. But uh-huh. yeah, no, I couldn't do that. No, I couldn't.
You just couldn't do
nah,
it. And would you have done it?
No, I wouldn't.
Right.
I was a little afraid of my mother. I'm not gonna lie. I wouldn't.
So you were afraid of your mother.
Yes.
Was your mother kind of one of those ladies that would whoop your ass?
Yes, she would.
She would whoop your ass.
She's done it many times. Yes, she would.
And she did?
Yes, she did.
And so, like, you knew not to play?
Yes, I did.
So you read the book, you mm-hmm. knew that she was going to quiz you,
mm-hmm.
and then you went out to play. And did she give you, like, an amount of time that you were able to go out to play?
Yeah, I mean, her vision was that you can play, but when the sun's about to set, you have to come inside. That was it.
Okay, so mm-hmm. I heard that statement in New York. I never heard it in London. Like, when the street lights come on,
yes.
that's when it's time for you to
yes.
come home. I never heard that.
Yeah, but if you grew up in the Bronx, you know that most of the action take place, most of the fun people.
The fun people?
Yes, yes. You know, most of the cool kids usually come out when the sun, you know, when the sun is down. Uh-huh. You know, that's when people come out and have barbecue, they, you know. But unfortunately, most of the bad kids come out around that time. So my mother was like, no, you're, when the sun goes down, you come. Not even, I mean, like 30 minutes before the sun goes down, that's when you come home.
Right. So you knew exactly.
I knew exactly.
Like you knew it just by your instincts.
Yes.
I knew. It was time to go.
8:30 was usually, I wouldn't go past 8:30 p.m. I would be, you know, I'd be upstairs.
Right. You'd be upstairs. So like, did you have, like, you know, when you're growing up, you have friends that be like, come on, man, just stay out for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I did, but, my mother had a lot of energy. That's what I can say.
She would tear that ass up, right?
I would be in trouble, yes.
Oh, my God. So you were pretty much a good kid. So now let me ask you this question. If your mother wasn't this strict, right, what do you think would have happened to your life?
I would have been in trouble.
You would have been in trouble?
Without a question. Unequivocally, I would have been in trouble.
Right. And that's because?
There's a lot of bad influences in the Bronx.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And were you like a curious kid? You wanted to know?
Yeah, I did. But, you know, I try to just go to school and
but
come
you
home.
Mind your business.
Yes.
Because the power that be, she had a lot of energy.
Yes, she did have a lot of energy. Yes, she did.
I love it. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So so looking back, now you're a grown man and you have children of your own. Mm-hmm. Looking back on your mother, what would you say?
I was blessed.
You were blessed.
Without a question. I was blessed.
She stood for you.
Yeah. And I think what also inspired me, what made me grateful, is that I hear the similar story from people that have been successful that had a similar mother.
Right.
Okay. And initially I thought, wow, well, she's going a little bit crazy. She's going a little overboard. But now that I'm a little bit older, I feel blessed.
Right. So like growing up in your community, the people that you hung out with or played ball with, where are they today?
A couple of people have passed away. Uh-huh. I'm grateful enough that a couple of people, I'm still friends with them up to this day. But most of the, I'm not sure what most of them, but I know a couple of people have passed away.
Right, right. And so you're grateful for your mother. And did you have a father in your life? Was your father in your life?
Yes, yeah, but not a positive influence.
Not a positive influence. Yes. Because he was over in Ghana.
No, he was here.
Oh, he was here?
Yes.
Oh, so what's your father like?
My father, we used to live together. Mm-hmm. And there was very just a lot of domestic violence in the house, and my mother had asked my father to leave.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because she was like not having it.
Yes.
Right. And she wanted you to grow up.
And just to bring credibility to my story, I come from 750 East 179th Street. 750 is, we call it Clinton Towers. Ask anybody,
what?
Clinton Towers.
Clinton Towers. Okay.
Ask people, the security guard, most of the security guard over there have been there about 10 to 15 years. Uh-huh. Ask them how many times cops have been to my house because my parents were fighting. Ask anybody, security guard. Uh-huh. Ask them.
Was it a lot?
Yeah, a lot.
Oh, wow. Wow. So was it actual physical or is it just verbal?
Both.
Both.
Okay. More verbal.
And what was that like for you as a man?
Traumatized.
Mm-hmm. And because you, okay. So tell the audience what that trauma was like, because that is one of the issues. I think there's a massive campaign in the city right now around domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when you're a child, you just want to just go to school and go play.
Right.
Who wants to hear their parents argue?
Right.
Nobody does. Very traumatizing.
Right.
And I think that's what made me the man that I am today. Like, you know, I grew up in such an environment, and now I have children, and I have to make sure that I don't, you know, repeat that cycle.
Uh-huh. Great. So when we come back, we're going to talk about medical school. We're going to talk about like what your programs are, what you're interested in, and who brought you, like what were your influences other than your mother, which is the, I would say that she is the covering over everything that you did in life. But like, I want to know who else were your influence and what your program's about. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. This is Noreen Sumter from Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I'm talking to Dr. Jones Adu, who's a medical doctor in New York City. So at the break, we talked about his life, his beginning, coming to New York, the tall buildings. And we talked about domestic violence. We talked about his very strict mother, who was a support, I would say a rock,
yes,
a very heavy rock, mm-hmm, to help you to get to where you are today.
Yes, she did.
So at the break, well, we said that we were going to talk about like medical school and your programs. Mm-hmm. So how did you get to medical school? I mean, I knew you were destined to go to medical school.
No,
Mommy had it the way Mommy had it, right?
Actually, no, it was not that way. It was not that. It was a little bit more challenging than I initially would have wanted to be. I went to Dewitt Clinton High School in the Bronx. I went to Stony Brook University. I was actually initially a respiratory therapist.
Respiratory therapist.
Yes, I have 3 medical degrees. I initially want to be, that's not boast. three medical degrees, respiratory therapist, then I became a physician assistant, then I went to medical school.
Uh-huh.
Why did I choose that path? Initially, I didn't want to go straight to medical school. I wanted to be able to, my mother was still living in the Bronx. I wanted to be able to work for some time and just enjoy life a little bit more if I went to medical school. And then I was able to do that. I became a respiratory therapist because I couldn't get into a physician assistant in school. I was actually
You became a respiratory therapist because
I couldn't get into a physician assistant the program.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I finished that first. Actually, I finished it on a Friday. Then I started physician assistant school on Monday.
Uh-huh.
On a Monday, and then then right after that, I worked for almost 4 years, and I went to medical school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so what age did you go to medical school?
I don't remember. I'm sorry. I don't. But I think it was somewhere like late 20s.
In your late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what was it like for you going back to school in your late 20s, even though it sounds like your whole life was one big study?
No, I always had a passion for study. I was passionate to learn something. So it was a natural progression.
Uh-huh. And what was it like going to medical school for you?
It was inspiring because that's what my mother wanted. I have to tell this story. My mother had a rough childhood, and I know that one of the things that made her happy is when I progressed in life. Okay, that's it. I had a lot of award from elementary school, from high school, and I've never seen my mother so jovial, so happy. That always been like a passion of mine.
So when you went to medical school, she was like really happy.
That's why I want my son to be. I'm a nurse. I want my son to be a doctor.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you fulfilled that.
Yes, I did.
Great. So now you're at medical school. Like, I want to know about the first day you see a cadaver. Or had you seen cadavers before?
Yeah, I did in PA school. I dissected the cadaver before, but I was just ready. I was working for 3.5 years, almost 4 years. I think financially I was okay. My mother was happy. I was able to finally support my mother somehow. And I was happy. I was ready. It was just a natural progression.
So when you went to, I want to know, because you had a really strict upbringing, then you go to college,
mm-hmm,
right? So now you're in that period of going to college. Did you break out? Did you go wild?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I'll be lying to you if I said I did.
You bucked out.
And I'm pretty sure I'm pretty confident that some people probably going to recognize me on this radio, and they're going to be like, I know Jones.
So,
I know Jones. Yes.
What did you do? You're making me laugh and you haven't said anything.
I don't I don't drink. I don't smoke. Uh-huh. I just went to parties.
So you were like a dancer. You like to dance.
Yeah, I was dance. How did you know that?
I don't know. I'm thinking you don't drink. You don't smoke.
I don't.
This was a guy that probably just wanted to tear up the dance floor.
I like to dance. I like to dance. I like good music.
Uh-huh. And you probably like to, you laughed a lot.
Yes, I did. Yes, I do.
I don't really drink that much myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not a very good dancer. I'm like one of those dancers. Like, so there used to be this club in the city called Club Sauvage. Mm-hmm. Right, Club Savage. I called it Sauvage, mm-hmm. right? And so I would love to go to that club because they had really good music. Now, I suck as a dancer. I'm not really... Yes, I'm a black girl, but I suck as a dancer, right? So I would go to this club. And what I would do... There was this show on TV that I used to watch, and it was an aerobic show. Mm-hmm. So... I would do my aerobic moves to the grapevine. And so, like, so guys would ask me to dance because I look cute, right? Mm-hmm. And then they would start dancing with me, and I'm doing this weird stuff. And they would hit me, tap me on the shoulder, and they go, "Thank you. That was enough." You know? So it was just so funny. So you like to dance, and so you're in medical school. You start doing. How was it difficult for you?
It was difficult. One of the major classes, biochemistry. And mm-hmm. anybody that have been to medical school does know one of the toughest classes is biochemistry.
Right.
I think I passed by 2 points.
You passed by two points.
Yes. I've never worked that hard. I've never prayed that hard. Anybody that went to medical school, I mean, they'll be lying to you if they didn't say it was challenging. It was very challenging. You had to give it all. There's no, I mean, I gave it more than 100%. Uh-huh.
You had to give it everything. So that means all the dancing stopped.
Everything stopped. I mean, you were studying. I mean, I kid you not. We went to class 8 a.m. in the morning. I mean, the information come at you like the speed of light. Uh-huh. I got home at 4 or 5 p.m. I took a nap. I'll be reading until 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning, go to sleep 4 or 5 hours, and start the whole cycle again.
Okay? Wow. It sounds like practice for, like, being in a hospital.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. Pretty intense.
Uh-huh. And so what was it like, you know, just what was it like, you know, actually going in, you got your white coat because mm-hmm. I think that's kind of like a ceremony,
yes,
right?
Yes.
How do I know this? Mm-hmm. This is TV. So you got the ceremony, you got your white coat. I know your mother must have peed in her pants.
She was very excited. She was very excited.
Did she call the neighbors in? Did she call everybody in Ghana?
Unfortunately, yes, she did. Yes. And not just the neighbors, but everybody in the, my son is a medical, my son's going to be a doctor. Uh-huh. Everybody, I'm from Clinton Towers, from East Stream, my 179. Everybody uh-huh. knows that. Everybody knows, my mother lived there for over 20 years. Uh-huh. You know, she probably let the whole neighborhood know that her son was going to be a doctor.
Uh-huh. Oh my God, that must, I can't even imagine how she must have been like flying.
Yes, she was.
So you got your white coat and now you're in the hospital. What was it like for you?
It was powerful. I think everybody kind of respect the process. Uh-huh. So one that they know that you made it, it's like, wow, this, you know, you're official. You know, like, you know, for you to make it, because we all take the same test. Uh-huh. We all go through the same classes and so forth. Nationally, we all, you know, everything is very parallel. So for me to be able to do it, my mother was very proud. And, you know, I was proud too. I'm not going to lie, I was.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, I know that you have a specific passion, mm-hmm. right, which is Medicaid and helping people to understand that process. Mm-hmm. Can you share that with me a little bit?
I would love to. Actually, that's also one of the main reasons why I came here. I come here not to promote myself, my story. Hopefully my story would also inspire other people, but that was actually the main reason why I came here.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted you to come too, because, uh-huh. you know, I wrote in the little summary at the top is that you're from the Bronx, mm-hmm. you went to medical school. Some people would have just left mm-hmm. and they don't want to engage anymore in that. But your mother was still very much in the environment. And I'm sure that you saw some disparities that, and I'm sure you saw a lot of people on the way, and everybody's probably asking, I've got this thing on my foot. Mm-hmm. Can you look at it for me and tell me what it is, doctor? You know how that is, right?
Absolutely.
So you knew that there was a lot of disparity in your community, and one of the areas that you specialize in working with is Medicaid.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think the term is underserved. So pretty much impoverished areas where my passion is at. If you know my story, I come from a poverty-stricken environment. I think to do anything more than that would have been a disservice To not just my mother, but just to my whole story. And right. I think, you know, they have enough people in Manhattan and so forth. I respect that. But we need some people in the poor. We need some people to serve the poor.
Right.
Okay? And that's what my passion is in.
So tell me about, like, you know, I don't know anything really about Medicaid. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that there are certain doctors and stuff that won't take it. Right.
Yes, yes.
So I'm going to guess that there are people that want certain services, mm-hmm. and if they don't know how to do research and if they don't know how to, mm-hmm. you know, do the necessary work to get it, mm-hmm. like they're not going to get the treatment they need. Is that where you come in? Tell me where you come in.
Yeah, I think Medicaid is, we know, it's a government subsidized insurance for mostly for poor people. I think the problem with Medicaid is that they don't reimburse the doctors as much as they should, and uh-huh. You know, kind of put a little bit, it make it a little bit difficult for some doctors to take care of some of these patients when they're not getting reimbursed properly. Uh-huh. I think I didn't quite understand until I became became more embedded in the medical system, but it's a little more complex than that. But a lot of people that need the help is the poor, but unfortunately, the reimbursement financially is not conducive for a doctor to take care of them. It make it very, very difficult. Okay,
right.
So let's not put the blame just on doctors not wanting to accept Medicaid patients, but also it just, you know, it's very difficult to take care of them financially.
Right. So if somebody has Medicaid and they want to get a certain service, mm-hmm. If you were to educate them, mm-hmm. what would you say?
Okay. All right. Okay. I mean, let me just put a little disclaimer. I'm not a Medicaid expert.
Right.
Okay. I'm far from that. I don't have any certifications. And I don't know much about insurance, I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
All I do know is that I have extensive experience in treating these people uh-huh. who have Medicaid. So I hope I made that very clear.
Okay.
But, you know, with that being said, there is tremendous, you know, most people that grew up in a poor environment,
uh-huh.
they are Medicaid, you know, HMO, Metro Plus, Health First, and so forth, what have you. And unfortunately, it's up to the physician or the institution to decide if they're going to accept it or not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how that comes in. Most of the city hospitals do serve these specific patients, and also, but again, you know, you need to keep the lights on. Okay. And how do you expect doctors to keep these lights on? Well, you know, the government is not reimbursing them mm-hmm. financially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they end up actually being served by a medical professional who's overwhelmed, taking care of tremendous amount of patients mm-hmm. with little financial incentive.
Right. So what is your specialty?
My specialty is serving the poor.
Okay.
Okay? I've been doing this since I was a physician assistant. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Before I went to medical school, I've been doing it. I worked with a floating hospital, serving the homeless shelters.
What's it like in the homeless shelters for? What is it like? And you go in as a doctor. What uh-huh. do you see?
I was actually, when I was serving the homeless, I was a physician assistant at
mm-hmm.
that time. I think it was something relatable. Some of the stories were very relatable to what I've seen in my environment, and also from personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I felt, again, it was my calling, very, very inspirational. And also, some of the stories that I've heard kind of kept me in a straight path.
Okay? Right.
It kept me in a straight path. So,
what is the overall illness and things that people are suffering from inside of the homeless shelter?
Okay. Whether you are in Mississippi, Alabama, or the Bronx, they are pretty much similar.
Mm-hmm.
Asthma, diabetes, hypertension,
mm-hmm.
stroke, substance abuse,
mm-hmm.
pretty much, you know.
And so, we got to go to break in a little bit. So what is, you know, like for a person that doesn't have a lot of money and needs some form of assistance, is there a aid for them? Because I do know people that they say they don't have medical, so they sit and they suffer with this condition. If they walked into a hospital, would they get treated?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, no hospital can refuse you. If you go in an emergent hospital, there's nobody that can refuse because you can't pay.
Right.
I don't think that's legal. So, you know, they will serve you. But unfortunately, most of the hospital that do serve the poor are usually like the city hospital. You
right.
know, the Kings County, the Queens Hospital, Jamaica, you know, those city hospitals, that's government funded. That's
right.
specifically geared for caring for people in that population.
Right. Okay. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Ding, ding, ding. Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
Are you feeling unhappy with your body, shape, or size? Ever feel out of control with food? I'm Elizabeth Tripp, your host of Nourish the Soul. Join me to uncover the root to these imbalances and discover a permanent solution to living a healthy life. Join us every Wednesday at my new time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So, and we're back. This is Noreen Sumter from Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, and we're talking to Dr. Adu. Right. So, I want to talk about like some of these city hospitals. Thank God we have them.
Absolutely, it's needed.
Thank God we have them, because I'm sure we have more people using city hospitals than the private ones.
Yes, that's correct.
Right? And so if we didn't have city hospitals, where would we go?
That's true. I mean, that's a good question. But the city hospital is made specifically for everybody, but specifically right. for, people that need it the most, people that right. need healthcare the most.
What do you think about these new pop-in clinics? You know, like, what do they call?
Emerging care.
Yeah, the emerging. Yeah. What do you think about those?
I think they're great. I think... give option. That's what America's all about, right? Uh-huh. It's options. Okay. Uh-huh. So I think, you know, it kind of lessens some of the stress for a lot of emergency room departments. And I think it gives people options.
Uh-huh. So I just told you about my Brooklyn hospital story with the gallbladder. And they said, we're going to whip it out. And I'm like, no, you're not. I can fix it. And I went home. And I know you're a doctor. Uh-huh. And I expect for you to say, not, right? But I went home and fixed it. Went on the internet. And that's another story we can talk about. Mm-hmm. Went on the internet, looked at what was there. They told me to use water, pectin, apple pectin, and celery for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And literally, I did that and it cleared it, right? I didn't have the inflammation. I didn't have the pain. I've never had it since, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jesus. And so, like, I come in to you and I tell you that story.
Yeah, I'm supposed to promote, I'm actually required to promote only evidence-based medicine. And if it's not evidence-based, I can't promote it.
Oh, so that's really good to know, because my doctor, I had a gynecologist. And I loved him. I love this man to pieces, but he's now retired. And I would say to him, I'm using this, that, and the other. Or he was a general practitioner. And he would be like, really? Like that. And I'd be like, yeah, it's working. And he'd be like, really? Like that. Please, Noreen. And I would say, I'm going to keep on trying it. I'm going to keep on doing it and be fine. So now I really get that he couldn't tell me anything otherwise, yes, because you're evidence-based practitioner, mm-hmm, and so you're bound by the, what is that thing that you guys take?
Hippocratic oath.
The what?
Hippocratic oath.
The Hippocratic oath. Mm-hmm. Hypocrisies, right? And so my doctor in England was very different. My doctor in England, he would tell me, because he was also into natural healing, mm-hmm, as well as medical. And he would tell me, he'd say to me, he would ask me, do you want natural or do you want medical? And I'd say, tell me natural first, mm-hmm, and then tell me, and then he would. And we'd work it out together. Mm-hmm. But I guess in America, there's such a thing as being sued.
Yes, that's I'm African. I have some experience with herbal medication, mm-hmm, and natural, but from a medical standpoint in the United States, I can't recommend that.
You can't recommend
only evidence based. No.
Right, I got that. All right. So tell me a little bit more about what's one of the cases or a situation that is like really important to you that maybe got your back up, got you riled up, or something that's happening that you just are not happy with?
Something I'm not happy with in the medical field?
Yeah, in the medical field or what we're doing to doctors or, you know, in the medical field.
Okay. I can tell you an interesting case.
Yes. We will keep the name secret to protect the innocent.
Yeah, definitely. But I think I had a lady, a 51-year-old lady who came with abdominal pain. Mm-hmm. And I was a brand new practitioner. And I was actually they tell you that, you know, we treat everybody very parallel, everybody similar. It doesn't mean, you know, the person can be a nun or whatever it might be. You're supposed to follow the guidelines.
Right.
You know, so a 51-year-old person, a young woman, 51-year-old young woman, yeah, quote unquote young, came to me with abdominal pain. The way that she described it looked more like a heartburn, but I was taught in medical school that if a woman comes with abdominal pain, make sure that you do a pregnancy test.
Right.
Okay.
I knew he was going to do that.
51-year-old, I was like, wow, what are the chances of her being pregnant? But, you know, I go back to the evidence-based.
Very, very good chance.
Okay. You know, 51. So, I asked all the questions I was supposed to ask, you know. I also had to access, even though it was a little uncomfortable, but, you know, I'm a medical practitioner. I asked all the sexual questions, and she denied all of them, and just admit epigastric, you know, and the, you know, pain. So I'm thinking it's a heartburn, but... You know, I was very, very brand new out of school. I was like, you know, I had to follow the, you know, I couldn't afford to make a mistake. I had to, you know, follow the guideline. So do a pregnancy test. Okay, so I did a pregnancy test, 51-year-old. I will never forget this. Like, it happened yesterday. It come back positive. You know, office pregnancy test, it come back positive. I was like, no, this can't be. So I go back again, I do it again. come back positive. Okay, wow. Okay, so I go back to her and I look her straight in the eye and say, "Miss, I speak to you humbly."
So here you are, brand new. Oh,
okay.
God.
I said, "Miss, I truly apologize. I don't mean to make any judgment, but, you know, I tested for you for pregnancy as I'm required to do, and it came up positive." And I looked at her and, you know, she kind of didn't look surprised. I was surprised. I was more surprised than, you know, she was. She didn't look surprised. And then she finally admitted to me that a week prior she was... You know, I wasn't a party. I had a one-night stand. Came up, you know, positive, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, that was pretty shocking. It was something that I would not expect, you know.
But were you shocked because she was 51?
Yes, I was. I was a little naive.
Thought 51-year-olds don't do sex?
No, I was a little naive. That's all I can say. But that teach you a lesson about evidence-based. You know, do what you're told to do. I was a little naive. That's all I can say. I was naive. But I did what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? What was she had the baby?
I didn't follow
up. You don't know? You didn't follow up with her because she didn't come back?
No, I didn't follow up.
Mm. So what else? So let me ask you a question in terms of like, and they say that AIDS is one of the fastest growing diseases that's hitting women of color and hitting women.
HIV, actually.
HIV.
That's a little... Let's leave that topic for another time.
What do you see most in your office?
I think mostly similar stuff. Hypertension, asthma, diabetes, and so forth. Okay, I don't mean to deviate from that question you're asking, but I think a lot of statistics are a little bit skewed.
Right.
And I don't... I'm very...
You don't ascribe to it?
Yes, I don't subscribe to it.
Okay, I got it. I got the communication when you said that we'll hold that for another time because it is skewed. There's a statistics that I'm questioning that's in the Bronx where the needle exchange, where they have those needle drops. Mm-hmm. They said that one park in the Bronx had 5,000 needles in that park. I don't know if it was a week, a day, a month, but 5,000 needles. Was there a concert in that park, I wonder?
Pretty much, yeah. So I think any literature that you read, any statistics you read, you got to dig a little more deeper into than whatever data they're giving you. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, because I was like, 5,000 needles, and it's just a little park. It wasn't a big park. It wasn't like Prospect Park, or it wasn't like Van Cortlandt Park. It was just like a little small community park. And I'm like, 5,000 needles, that's a lot of needles, right? But I think that I personally think that it might have been skewed just because they wanted to get those needle drops. Those are very expensive. They're very, very expensive to put into the park. So it was probably somebody wanted that contract and they did some kind of skewed, you know, hokey-doke case.
No comment.
No comment. Okay, so you have all these notes and stuff. I want to see tell me about some of those notes.
Sure. I want to say that I'm, you know, I feel honored to be here. I'm not going to give you any information that I can't prove.
He's evidence and research based.
Yes, absolutely. Everybody that knows me know that I'm very evidence and research based. I think one of the things I'm passionate about is not serving the poor, but also civic engagement, as I let Miss Sumter know. I hope that we can have a little bit more time dedicated to this because I think...
we can talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's very... That's one of the main reasons I'm here. I've come here for two reasons. To promote health care for the underserved population. Mm-hmm. We kind of delved a lot on that. But I also want to talk about civic engagement.
Okay. So tell me, like, if somebody needs health care, they're underserved and they want to be served by you... Mm-hmm. How would they reach you?
You can contact me on LinkedIn, but I don't want to promote myself. I don't.
But how would how would they reach you? Reach your office?
No, I don't want to promote myself. I don't want to promote myself. No.
Okay.
Just I want to talk about serving the poor. I want to encourage people to serve the poor.
But how would a poor person reach you?
If they want to, you can contact me on LinkedIn. That's fine. You can get all my information on LinkedIn, or you can email me. That's fine.
And what? How would they email you?
My first name is Jones, Jones _ADDOH @yahoo.com.
Okay.
So again, Jones, Jones _ADDOH @yahoo.com. You can, any help that I can, you know, I'm not going to charge you for any services or anything like that. Anybody knows me know what I'm about. I'm pretty well known in the Bronx. Uh-huh. Also, you know, in New York, I won a few awards. I'm not monetary driven. I'm not coming here to promote myself. Anything I can do to help you, direct you, I'm more than honored.
Okay.
For free.
Great. So let's talk about your civic duties.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, say more about that.
Okay. I think it is extremely, extremely, especially for poverty stricken environment for you to be civically engaged. What mm-hmm. does civic engagement mean? Okay.
Right.
That you have to understand that you are part of a community, okay? Mm-hmm. That you owe an obligation to make sure that the community prosper, okay? Mm-hmm. It's that simple, okay? Mm-hmm. You are part of a community, okay? And you have an obligation, a moral obligation, to make sure that the community prosper, okay? And to make sure that you serve the community so that your daughters and kids and people behind you can have a better life than you did.
Look, he's suddenly become alive.
Yes, I am. I'm
really,
very alive.
It suddenly became really yes. alive and suddenly very pumped up. Mm-hmm. So you better hear this man. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm
so
I'm
what areas you serve the poor and what does that mean? I know you work in detention centers.
Yes, detention center. I did addiction medicine. What else I have? City hospital, community
addiction
health.
Medicine. Let's uh-huh. touch on that.
Substance abuse in right. impoverished areas. Yes.
And so, what is that like? A prescribing methadone?
Yes, I've done. I work in methadone. Yes, I have. Uh-huh. I've done that before.
What other things that they do? Because I've heard that there was a methadone clinic down the street from where I used to live on Washington Avenue mm-hmm. in Clinton Hill. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. But I would see people lining up, all kinds of people, right? Mm-hmm. So black people, white people, businessmen, mm-hmm. All kinds of people. And I'm like, why are these people lining up here? What are they doing? And then somebody told me, oh, it's methadone, mm-hmm. right? Because there was such a variety and such a mix of people. That I was like, and then I was like, at the time, my neighborhood was predominantly African American, black. And then I'd see these white business guys in suits. I'm like, why are they there? What is that? What is going on over there? Mm-hmm. And then it was methadone. What I heard, what I understood is that they don't want to do it in their community. Mm-hmm. So they come to these communities to take, as my mother would say, the shame out of mm-hmm. their eye.
That's correct.
Yeah. So so what else do they do? Other than methadone, what else is addiction medicine?
Yeah, that's pretty much. So most people that understand addiction medicine is usually coexists with a mental health component.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much they provide services for mental health as well as treat the physiological aspect of addictive illicit drugs pretty uh-huh. much. Uh-huh.
So is drugs on the rise or is it on the decrease?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Because uh-huh. I heard that cocaine was on the rise again.
The biggest story right now is opioid. Uh-huh. So pretty much that's the biggest story right now. I think nationally you're pretty much aware that opioids is killing a tremendous amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do research on it, that's one area that you definitely want to delve into. But yeah, opioid is the biggest talk right now nationally. Okay, it's also being tackled by Congress right now. I have extensive knowledge about opioids. We can speak about it another time.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, mm-hmm. opioid thought, mm-hmm. and we'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you feeling unhappy with your body, shape, or size? Ever feel out of control with food? I'm Elizabeth Tripp, your host of Nourish the Soul. Join me to uncover the root to these imbalances and discover a permanent solution to living a healthy life. Join us every Wednesday at my new time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
This is Noreen Sumter, and we are back. We are in our last segment of the show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, and we're speaking to Jones Adu. And Jones is going to tell us why it is our responsibility to be active in
civic engagement,
to be civil and active in civic engagements.
Yes, it's very, very crucial.
And I'm going to ask you why.
Yes, it's very because you have a moral obligation to make the world better than you live in. That's pretty much for the people behind you. You have a moral obligation to make it better for the people behind you. Okay. The people before you have done the same thing before you got here. So you have a moral obligation to make sure that is done.
So, like, I'm just going to be devil's advocate here and be like a young person that says, really, what are they doing for me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a good question. I mean, I think that's a fair question. I think one of the question that people always one of the interesting component about policy is like, I was voting, but nothing ever changed, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. But I think one of the reason why things never change because you're not holding the people that you voted for accountable. You thought that you just voted and then everything will change overnight. No, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that way. And you have to hold them accountable.
And so how would I hold them accountable? I'm just this little old me. How would I hold them accountable?
I think before you vote for any candidate, you should research them and see what they stand for. Mm-hmm. And they tell you they're going to do A, B, and C. And then when you vote for them, when they get into the office, you have to make sure that they do A, B, and C.
And how would you actually, I know you're going to do research and I know you're research based, but the average person is not research based. Mm-hmm. We are TV based. Mm-hmm. We look at TV, we see something that represents us, like a big afro and mm-hmm. a kid, and we vote for our current mayor, like mm-hmm. right, we don't really know anything about him, mm-hmm. not that much about him, but he does, you know, does what he does, and you vote. So how would you suggest people vote? Okay. Going forward.
Sure. Again, I want to do another disclaimer. I'm a student of politics. I'm not a politician. Mm-hmm. I don't have any degree in political science. No, or I do believe that we should be civically engaged. Uh-huh. Okay. I've been civically engaged since I was in college. Okay. You have to get involved. But I'll answer your question briefly. Now we live in a generation where the information is at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have no excuse.
So how do I know this information is correct?
Okay. There's many ways you can gather information from your local mm-hmm. library. Make sure they are published information from your local mm-hmm. library. And you have, again, you, there's many, you have access to the political office. You can go to the office and ask them any question that you want.
Okay? Right. So basically what I'm hearing is that you're saying as an individual in this city, as a member of this city,
yes,
we have power in our hands.
Absolutely. And not just a more power, but a moral obligation.
A moral obligation.
Yes.
We have power.
Uh-huh.
And we should research and educate ourselves is what I'm hearing so that we can make correct choices.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
And you have no excuse.
There's no excuse.
No, you have no excuse.
Okay.
If you live in a democratic country, okay,
uh-huh,
if you studied, we all have social studies, okay,
uh-huh,
we all been, we have studied.
Uh-huh.
We live in a democratic country.
Uh-huh.
Why are you not exercising your power?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Why do you think people in the 60s fought for the right for African American Latino for them to vote, for you not to vote?
Uh-huh.
What is your reason? What is your excuse?
Okay, so basically what I'm also hearing is you're saying shoulder stand. So you have to stand on the shoulders of the people that came before you.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And how did you become so civically inclined?
Okay.
Just your story.
Okay. I appreciate that question. Okay. Before I even project, the people that got me involved in this social justice is my fraternal organization called Malik Fraternity Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded in 1977, May 13, 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the premise for the organization is to make sure that we recognize African contribution to Western civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to make sure that we give Africa its due diligence. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was a young man, lost from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Came to a university, grew up in the Bronx. Okay, now I went to a college, an institution where I met men that have been through the same struggle that I have,
mm-hmm,
and they succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, men that have been through the same struggle that I had, and they succeeded. I had no excuse, and I had to make sure that I promote all the positive things that Africa have done for the Western civilization.
Okay,
okay?
All right. And so there was a question that just popped into my head,
mm-hmm,
and it went, so you came from Africa, but you did you know all the stuff that Africa had contributed?
No, absolutely not. I want to take, if you don't mind, I want to take a few minutes to speak on this.
We don't have a few minutes, but speak on it.
Yes, speak on it, because I'm very passionate about this. I think if you're Italian, you should be proud of yourself. If you're Irish, you should be proud of yourself. If you're African, you should be proud of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Africans have done a lot for civilization.
Mm-hmm.
I know you heard about Egypt. Okay,
mm-hmm,
even people who quit Egypt were, broadcasted as the Middle East. Egypt's in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, arguably,
mm-hmm,
one of the most influential civilizations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, okay, that we need to promote that. Okay,
mm-hmm,
also the richest man that ever lived on this earth, the richest man, Hama Kabaka, was,
mm-hmm,
also an African.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, November issue of Money Magazine 2017,
mm-hmm,
spoke about that.
Mm-hmm.
Hama Kabaka. It was not Carnegie. It was not Rockefeller. It was not Bill Gates. Okay, it was Hama Kabaka. I mean, it was Mansa Musa.
Mm-hmm.
Mansa Musa was the most richest man that ever lived on this earth. He was from Africa.
Mm-hmm. So now, what was it like for you to come from Africa and to come to America and to learn about Africa and the contributions? What was that like for you? Was
powerful.
Right.
Inspiring.
Uh-huh.
Powerful. Inspiring.
So it gave you, did it sort of like give you legs?
Yes.
Okay.
And wings.
Uh-huh. It gave you wings.
Yes.
So how, what would you like to, so we're coming to the end of the show, what would you like to leave my listeners with?
Oh, that's I appreciate that question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think it's very, very important for us to know that let's not forget the poor, okay, that they shoulder a lot of issues,
mm-hmm,
okay, that affect the United States, not just in the United States, but in the world, okay? But please, please take an extra effort to help the less fortunate, okay?
Okay.
It could be anything. Okay?
So is it like what I said to you when I first met you, is that, what did I say to you?
Okay, I think I will never forget this. And, one of the most influential people that I also met, okay, you told me that even though you grew up in it, but you asked about my story, why my story, and I told you about how I came from a poverty-stricken environment,
mm-hmm,
and you said that you might have been poor financially, but mentally, you was rich. Okay,
right.
And I appreciate you. That very, stuck very, very well with me, and I really appreciate that. It was very, very inspiring.
Right.
I need at that moment. And thank you for that, thank
awesome.
You for that.
Thank you so much. And so you want to leave, even though those people in the Bronx might be physically, monetarily,
mm-hmm,
poor,
mm-hmm,
collectively, spiritually, they're very rich.
Mm-hmm.
And what there is to awaken, I'm going to say to awaken that spirit in them so that they step into their power.
Mm-hmm.
They become physically, civically responsible,
mm-hmm,
that they become responsible for their health and their well-being, and that they stand for their health and well-being by utilizing and expanding on the services that you provide.
Absolutely. Okay. And also in closing, that our health is our wealth.
Absolutely.
Our health is our wealth. our health is our wealth. How can I you expect the poor to progress in life if he is physically not well? How can he progress?
Okay? Right.
So our health is our wealth, and if you want the less fortunate to progress, please help them health-wise. Okay? Help them.
Great.
And get get engaged civically.
Get engaged. You heard what the man said. Get engaged. So I would like to absolutely thank you so much for gracing my show with your presence. And is there any questions that you... Is there one thing that you'd like me to ask you to ask... that you'd like me to ask you? That's one of my things.
Yes.
What's the question?
What are my fears?
What are your fears?
Yes. What are my fears? I have a few... I'll say three.
Okay.
I have three fears. That I make the world not as good as I had it than my daughter and my son. Okay? Uh-huh. That if I did not leave this world better than I came into it, I hope that I come out. I'm a little passionate now. I'm a little... Talk about civic engagement, social justice. That's one of my passions. Uh-huh. So I'm a little bit hyped. I'm a little hyped right
now. So leaving it better than you found it.
Yes, if I don't leave it better for everybody than I found it, then we have failed.
Okay. Great.
Number two, what is number two? That I want to encourage people to be more civically engaged. Okay. And I think if my generation, the people behind me don't become engaged civically, we're in trouble.
Right.
Okay. I'm a little bit hyped, so I forgot the third one. I'm like, what are you talking about? I want to come back for civic engagement. I want to talk about social justice, okay? So, but that's pretty much it. I kind of want to leave with this, you know, with a few, medicine is always a summary component, like you said. I kind of want to, people know me, know that when I get a little excited, I babble a lot, and
maybe you should do my class, storytelling.
Yeah, the words might not come across as well as I would like, you know, to come across.
But people, we feel your passion.
Okay, but I kind of want to just, you know, reiterate just a few things that I've said before. I want to come back to that component again that, you know, number one, you know, please look out for the less fortunate. Their health is the wealth, okay? And making sure they have a good health, affordable health care is very, very important. Number two, please get civically engaged. Many, many, many people.
Mother and if Teresa, people want to talk to you about being civically engaged, they have a question about their health and their health, mm-hmm. which is their wealth, mm-hmm. they can reach you at?
Jones, J-O-N-E-S _ADDOH @yahoo.com. Just email me. I'll meet you anywhere, anytime.
Okay, great. So on that note, again, thank you so much for gracing me with your presence and being on my show. And so this is Noreen Sumter. I hope the show was as good for you as it was for me. And I want to say thank you, Anthony Morrison, Laurie, and Stephen, and Christina. Thank you for joining the show. And I wish you a good night and have a fantastic July 4th. Woohoo! Bye!
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to SecretsOfTheSire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.